Welcome to Reading the Grid with Aaron and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. This week's Bahrain Grand Prix had it all. History made, penalties dished out, and some standout performances across the board. Oscar Piastri claimed his second win of the season and McLaren's first ever victory in Bahrain, breaking the team's drought at this desert circuit. It wasn't smooth sailing everywhere. Teammate Lando Norris picked up a 5-second penalty for a false start that was reported by Verstappen after lining up out of position. Lewis Hamilton lit up the track with a classic comeback drive, charging to P5 and earning driver of the day. Haas got both drivers into the points after dismal qualifying when Ollie Bearman ended up 20th and Esteban Ocon crashed out of Q2. Alpine finally got on the scoreboard with their first points of the season, with Pierre taking P6 after a fantastic qualifying.
There were many penalties given out during and after the qualifying and the race that the results, even the final podium, were not assured until some time after the podium celebrations were completed. Qualifying produced some surprises and grid drops, with 9 of the top 10 in the final classifications of the race being different from where they started in the race. A safety car on lap 32 of 57 was deployed to clean up debris caused by Yuki Tsunoda taking an entire side off of Carlos Sainz Williams, caused havoc with the strategies with Red Bull and Ferrari ending up the losers, and the fight for second among Charles Leclerc, George Russell, and Lando Norris brought a nail-biting drama as Norris struggled to get past Leclerc and electronics on Russell's car failing, including him experiencing transponder issues that caused the timing tower to not show him at all and broadcast not showing the time differentials between the cars fighting for the second place.
Bahrain marked the 5th anniversary of Romain Grosjean's 2020 crash, a moment that forever changed the sport safety standards. We'll also spill the grid tea about what storylines we are following coming out of the Grand Prix weekend. Let's rewind Bahrain, where some of our predictions aged like fine wine and others, well, didn't make it past turn one. From surprise penalties to podium shakeups, let's break down everything that actually went down under the lights and how it stacked up against what we thought would happen. So, Ina, who won your heart in Bahrain?
It was the Haas drivers. Ollie Bearman had to put me through the ringer. I think it's because I said I left an arc. So he obviously heard me and decided to give me an arc, which was to qualify 20th. At that point, I thought he would break my heart because that's not where Ollie should be. So then, to compound Haas' misery, Esteban Ocon crashed spectacularly in Q2. He stayed out on his first set of tires for a huge number of laps, and he kept Verstappen behind him when Verstappen changed to hards. And I thought that was a valiant effort. And then Bearman going from 20th to 10th was amazing. When he made it into the point, I just thought, how amazing to have that trajectory. There was also a driver that, in Aaron's words, wooed me. But that was George Russell, which it's interesting because I don't have anything against George. He's just never someone I root for. But I have to say, he is starting to endear me to him. I also feel for him for not having an assured contract for 2026, which is ridiculous considering how extremely well he's performing. But the fact that his car started to completely break down on him, and yet he kept it together, kept it in second, I think there's a potential that at some point he will win my heart.
George is an interesting driver for me. I don't know what it is. I have nothing against him. He just hasn't won my heart. He has come out super strong. He was P3 the first two races. I was not surprised that he had such a strong race in Bahrain because back in 2020, it was his first chance to drive because Hamilton had COVID. He was on loan from Williams at the time and he almost won, which was phenomenal. And so I think this has always been a track that's been well suited for him and his driving style and the Mercedes car. It was a good arc for him because he placed higher in qualifying, and then him and Antonelli had penalties for an unsafe pit release, which, switched up the order before we even got started. So for him to land on the podium, I thought was extremely well deserved. I know it's boring, but the one who won my heart was Oscar. It's his second pole. McLaren has never had pole or won that race, and he just had a phenomenal weekend. His confidence was off the chart. And when you listen to how he was speaking about the car and it being fast compared to Lando, who was really down and was like, I forgot how to drive. It was just night and day with the two of them as far as mindset and how they were handling this race.
Oh, I completely agree with you about the mindset. And I actually thought Lando walked back some of his comments about the car being not as fast, which I think we can all agree was an exaggeration at best and projection of what he actually wanted the reality to be. So the fact that he acknowledged that the difference in their performance, very good for his self-awareness, but him and Hamilton after qualifying were the most depressing looking, sounding. I watched Sky coverage before the race, and they had an interview with Zac Brown, who said like he was trying to loosen Lando up and he was just trying to make him laugh, which obviously worked because he was definitely in a better headspace than he was after qualifying.
He had a great start to the race, even though, yes, he was over the line and Verstappen very quickly called him out for that, which got him his penalty. But he jumped from sixth to third. And then he had the battle with Hamilton, and he should have given the spot back because he did overtake outside. But I thought he had a great start to the race.
Is it a great start if you start driving over your grid line? I feel that is part of the nerves that he always feels, and his approach to that is also not the best. I also just want to point out, I don't think it was just Verstappen noticing that. I think he would have gotten penalty anyway. In fact, Verstappen alerting everyone probably caused him damage limitation for serving the penalty sooner than if that penalty came in later. And I don't think affected his race too much. I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think Verstappen noticed that because he notices everything, or he pays a special attention to Lando because he's leading the championship?
I thought about that. I would say he was looking for something, and that one was pretty obvious. That was an e easy tee up.
There is a video of him constantly looking, but they're next to each other on the grid.
It was a pretty obvious error on Lando's part. And I would agree with you. That has got to be nerves because he was clearly not as confident as he normally has. And Max and Lando started in their worst positions of a race so far this year in sixth and seventh.
Who broke your heart, Aaron?
Oh, I feel like there's a long list.
Well, leave some for me. Go ahead.
I will. Isaac Hadjar was probably my top one. He has been, for me, my most impressive rookie, and he just did not have a great race this go round. He was out of the point. Who broke yours?
Kimi Antonelli. I was under the impression that with every Grand Prix, he kept getting better and he getting closer to George Russell. I don't know if you paid attention to the differentials between teammates. His differential to George is the worst.
Was this differential the worst for this race, or are you saying they have the worst differential overall because he's finished behind him or close to him in most of the races except this one?
I'm talking about overall time differential.
Okay.
And the
Wow.
only really close one was our last race, which was about 2 seconds, which was great in terms of finishing the race. But he was nowhere close in the other races. I thought Antonelli's qualifying this race was amazing because before he got dropped down, he was P4, George was P2, and I think it was 3 tenths, but not bad
But
in
that's the
terms of.
worst you want to be from your teammate.
Correct. But again, in all the other qualifying, in time-wise, he wasn't that close. Race-wise, he's not that close. And in this race, after the grid drop, I thought he would stay in the points and not be that far away from George. He ended up out of the points, very far away from George. I do think Mercedes' strategy of pitting him 3 times was ridiculous because what did they expect? He was not going to get better. He kept destroying his tires. And that's actually one thing that everyone says when rookies come into F1, that tire management is the one skill that they learn the most while they're in F1. Not that they can't be already great at it, from lower formulas, but it's different in F1, and it's not something that they focus on because before they get to F1, their most important thing is to be fast. I thought it was disappointing.
I am surprised because if you look at Kimi's finishes, I would have assumed, and I have assumed, that he has been closer to Russell than apparently what their actual stats are.
If you just look at the stats, it's actually very revealing. For instance, I don't know if they're the smallest difference, but one of the smallest difference is Stroll and Alonso. But remember, Alonso had a horrible couple of races in the beginning, so obviously their overall stats are not great. I'm not saying it's troubling that Kimi is that far behind. If you think that Mercedes may be the second fastest car, he's not driving like it. He's been crash less, knock on wood, because I don't want him to crash. He's not as fast as I expected him to be.
That's an interesting perspective, and I guess we will see what their time looks like in Jeddah. As far as Bahrain goes, can we talk about Hülkenberg, how he had his Q1 lap deleted 45 minutes after the session decision that cost Alex Albon a shot at running in Q2 and possibly Q3, which could have changed his race. And if that wasn't disappointing enough for Sauber, Hülkenberg was then disqualified after the completion of the race due to excessive wear of his car's skid block, which is the second time already this year we've seen that because Hamilton was disqualified from the Chinese Grand Prix for the exact same reason.
I actually read the disqualification. The difference is actually, I thought was smaller in Hülkenberg's case. I think it's 2 millimeters, and I believe for Lewis it was 5. That is even more painful because the difference is so tiny. I get the rules, and every other team was able to keep it within that frame. As we discussed when we talked about Lewis's disqualification, this is not something they check every car for, so I'm wondering if Williams asked FIA to pay attention to Hülkenberg, Albon was definitely screwed. I think it's disgraceful that it took so long for them to review just because it was in the corner that they usually don't see.
The steward should have been on that.
Also, I don't know if you saw the document of everyone who went over track limits. It was
It
hilarious.
was insane. Well, I mean, what were we on? Lap 20s, early 20s, when Kimi and Hadjar were already put on notice that if they did it again, they'd get a penalty.
Well, not only that, so there was Lando. Everyone went over track limits, and sometimes there's a reason for it. I think the only ones who didn't, off the top of my head, is Russell, Gasly, who had a very clean race. The key here is that it seems that only Doohan got a 5-second penalty. But I thought again, FIA and their penalties that are not applied equally. And of course, Doohan had to get a penalty. Has there been a race where he did not get a penalty? Because that is the one constant.
At least it wasn't points on his license.
We're going to
Silver
talk
lining.
about, yeah, we're going to talk
Silver
about the others
linings.
who got their penalty points on their license.
I will say, around lap 15, for a brief period of the race, and the only time my race prediction showed true, because we had Charles Leclerc in first, Lewis Hamilton in second, and Oscar Piastri in third, and that was the only time.
It was very brief.
It was
It was,
very, very brief.
I didn't even have that luxury because Lando never made it to two. Although Charles Leclerc was in third and Oscar was in first, which I would have taken at any point of the race.
Well, I was going to say lap 25, I did note that Piastri was in first and Leclerc was in third.
If only we could have just stayed there.
I know, if only. One thing that I did note was Red Bull's unusually slow pit stops. But apparently, these were attributed to a wiring issue in the pit gantry, which caused a malfunction in the traffic light system. First, we saw Max Verstappen. His first pit stop lasted over 4 seconds due to a delay in the release signal. And his second stop was 6.2 seconds long due to a sticky right front wheel. And then poor Yuki Tsunoda also experienced a similar delay. Christian Horner described the issue as quote unquote horrible day and emphasized the need for further analysis because typically Red Bull has very quick pit stops. So this was unusual for them.
It was. And interesting tidbit that I heard was that their head of operation, Jonathan Wheatley, is now the team principal of Sauber. When he left, you have to wonder, is that another person that they lost that kept some semblance of efficiency that they no longer have?
I would say yes, based on these pit stops. That was disastrous for them. I mean, I don't think it would have changed their race because Verstappen was having issues with the car the entire time. But on the flip side, Yuki actually made it into the points for the first time.
He did. And even though he was in ninth and Max ended up in sixth, again, the time differentials was not small. I think it's the first time in 12 Grand Prix that another Red Bull driver ended up in points. That is an improvement. And again, he never tested at Bahrain with this car. This is only his second race with this car. So maybe our expectations should be
Adjusted a little bit. I'd say it's a
maybe.
big milestone for him. I mean, and think about it. If Verstappen's not driving that car into the podium at Bahrain and they're only three places apart, I'd say that's not a bad day at the office for Yuki, even if their times are different. Because if Verstappen's having that trouble, Yuki's still new in this car, right?
I agree, but we as spectators go by where they finish, and sixth and ninth seem very respectable and probably the best that a second seat driver could expect after two races. However, the teams actually look at all the technical data and they look at raw speed. Sometimes the placement doesn't tell the full story, and I feel this is the issue with Yuki. I'm not saying he drove a bad race. But I think if he qualified Racing Bulls into P6, P5, and but for their strategy, could have ended up further their P9 in Racing Bulls, there's at least that expectation when he's in a Red Bull, acknowledging that it's a very difficult car to drive. He didn't do any testing with it, all of the caveat. So it's a good sign he's on the right path. Yes, Max ended up six because he managed to overtake Gasly after the last corner as they were coming down the line, which was so impressive and just shows you that Max definitely doesn't give up. If we're talking about Red Bull family, Liam Lawson. This is the man who got two penalties and penalty points. So now he has way more penalty points than he does actual point. I just love it. I'm like, who did he fight with? Lance Stroll. Really? This was worth getting a 5 second penalty for. And then he fought with Hülkenberg for 10 second penalty. It's hilarious. I don't remember them showing the Stroll incident. I don't know if they even showed the Hülkenberg incident. I just saw they kept showing him adding penalties.
For someone as arrogant as Lawson, I have very little sympathy, but I do find it pretty ironic, as you said, he has more penalty points than points.
Well, speaking of somebody else who got penalty points as opposed to points was Carlos Sainz. He had an amazing qualifying. Carlos ended up in P8 in front of Lewis Hamilton. I love how Sky broadcasters kept saying, oh, and he sees that his car is behind him because they kept calling Lewis's car his car. I wouldn't go that far, but I'm sure in some ways it was a little satisfying.
It was personal. There was definitely an overtake moment between the two of them in the race that was very personal and understandably so.
Understandable, but my point is, I knew he was not gonna last long. What I didn't realize, like how bad his day would go. It just went terrible, awful. He got a penalty. They wanted to retire the car, but then of course he would have to have a penalty on the next race. So he served the penalty, and they finally retired the car. Hilariously, FIA missed that he served the penalty. They first announced that he's going to get a 3 grid penalty in the next race. And I thought, was there another penalty that I missed? And then, of course, there was a retraction within an hour. So that was a little confusing. Let's talk about Lewis Hamilton getting driver of the day. Now, I'm sure you probably think it's totally deserved. And I'm not saying it's as undeserved as Yuki getting it in Japan, but I thought there were better candidates. For instance, Behrman 20-10 in his rookie year.
I honestly was a bit surprised that Hamilton got driver of the day. I personally would have expected it to be Bierman because going 20-10 in your rookie year is really impressive. The reason Hamilton got it was because it was very reminiscent of Hamilton in his prime, where he would make these charging comebacks and they actually showed some overtakes and excitement of him on the track, which we haven't seen. Like, yes, he won sprint pole and the race, but as far as in track action, there has not been much to write home about.
I agreed, especially his overtake on Verstappen. It wasn't the most impressive overtake, but I'm sure it was extremely satisfying.
I would say so. And that was right after he and Sainz were going at it, he and Verstappen were going at it. So I would say, in that sense, yes, I can see why he was given driver of the day. Bierman, 20 to 10 from a rookie is huge. I also think it would be boring to give it to Piastri, but that's a big one. It was his second pole. It's the first time McLaren won. He crushed that race. That in and of itself is worthy of driver of the day. Driver of the day this year is a little confusing to me because I didn't understand why Kimi Antonelli got it when he did. He should have had it in Australia, in my mind. I don't think Yuki really deserved to get it before, but he did. Hamilton, to me, out of all of those, is the most justified.
He's definitely most justified. I always thought of Driver of the Day to be a popularity contest. If you remember, last year, Lando Norris would get it pretty much every race. Max would only get it if he went from 17th to first, which he did in Brazil. This is not surprising that Driver of the Day doesn't quite match who had the best race. I think it cheapens the whole idea of Driver of the Day because even if it's not Oscar Piastri, who definitely deserved it, he didn't put a foot wrong, and it's only his third year. There could have been more interesting choices that would have been more justified.
I mean, you could even make an argument for Russell.
You could. Speaking of Russell, so what did you think of the fact he did not get a penalty for the DRS issue? So just to sum up, he had an issue with a transponder, which was not something that Mercedes controlled. Fair. As he went to press a radio button or secondary radio button, he accidentally activated DRS manually when he obviously did not have less than a second gap to Piastri. He turned it off very quickly. I think FIA determined that the difference was only like 0.02 second. And then, which I thought was extremely smart, and I was just giving him driver of the day for that, he slowed down on the next corner. The telemetry showed that he actually lost time, which is all very good damage control on George's part. However, FIA is always vocal about how they punish the action and not the outcome. So even though the outcome did not give George any advantage, the action was against the rules. And I agree, it's very unfair for him to lose position for something that he had no control over. But on the other hand, I think he should have gotten that penalty. Now, you might say this is because I want Charles Leclerc on the podium. I actually do. I don't think Lando deserved to be P2. So in that case, I don't think that would have been that fair either. That sets a precedent for the next time this happened, and that might happen with more forethought of let's see if we can get away with it. Sky said there was a precedent from 2018 with Perez where something similar happened and he did not get a penalty. But I wanted to ask you, since you're more impartial than I am when Charles Leclerc podium chances are on the line, do you think he should have gotten a penalty?
If there was precedent, I can see why they kept with that, even though technically it is the action, and they should have for Perez and they should have for Russell. Since Russell took so much proactive damage control and it showed that it really didn't do anything and it was out of his control, I can understand it or justify it in my head why they didn't. This just goes back to my whole issue with FIA and the stewards and their lack of consistency because this has been a problem for years. And if anyone's playing the drinking game of me talking about the safety car in 2021, we're going to talk about it again. It's frustrating as a fan and it's frustrating as a new fan, especially when you're trying to learn the rules. When they do not keep things consistent, it's really difficult. And then you can make arguments every which way for how it's going to put your driver in favor. So, yes, they should have given Perez a penalty. They should have given Russell a penalty. Why they didn't with Perez, I don't know. I can understand it a touch with George, but again, they need to be consistent.
Well, I think for Perez, it was because we know the influence that Red Bull had on race directors. What's interesting about Russell is that apparently Leclerc had the same issue, and there's actually video evidence of him doing that. I don't know what damage control, if any, he did. They were saying if this was Ferrari trying to get this penalty, Fred would probably not be as insistent on it. If it was the other way around, Toto would just go ballistic and make a big stink out of it.
If you look at Lando going over the line and giving him a 5 second penalty, because Alonso got a 5 second penalty previously for doing the same thing. They were consistent there. In general, I think he should have gotten the penalty.
I feel validated. That's great.
With Bahrain in the books and the teams barely catching their breath, we head straight into the final leg of this triple header, Jeddah. The high-speed street circuit under the lights always brings chaos, close calls, and surprises. So let's get into our predictions for Saudi Arabia. Ina, who's going to be on the podium, and what is Ferrari going to do?
For Jeddah, I'm going to be boring because Jeddah is a street circuit, which is similar to Australia, similar to Baku, similar to Monza. And so I'm still going to stick with my boy Piastri. I think he's going to be P1 because I think he's in the right headspace. I think he's in tune with the car. The car is still the best out there. So Piastri is one. I think Lando will have a redemption drive. I think he's P2. And then I know, Aaron, you're going to hate how boring I am. We're gonna go with Charles Leclerc P3. I'm manifesting it. And again, I have to preface it, no disqualification, no dropping down the order, which happened in Bahrain. The universe owes me one. Ferrari's gonna do P3, P4. This time, if there is a safety car, please be in Ferrari's favor, which I know will not happen, but we can always hope.
You're keeping your same podium. You're carrying it from Bahrain to Jeddah.
Correct.
Okay. I agree with you that Oscar will be number one. He is on fire. Max is number two because it's a street circuit. He won it last year. I'm torn between Russell and Leclerc. I will say Russell just to change it up. And then I think it'll probably be Lando, Leclerc, Hamilton, which I don't really love saying that. It's really tight in the top. I think Russell's got momentum. I think he'll do well. I know Leclerc was on the grid last year, so I'm torn. But just to change it up so we're not the exact same, I'll say Oscar, Max, Russell.
Aaron, if your grid manifests itself, I'm going to blame you for it
Oh, please.
because
I want Hamilton to be higher than where he is, but just with how tight things are, I don't know how we get there.
you have a point about Max, but I don't think they're bringing upgrades to Jeddah. But we'll see what happens. That's the beauty of
Who
this.
thought he was gonna win Japan? Because I didn't see that one coming.
I don't remember that Japan is that hard to overtake, but the fact that nobody could overtake was an issue. From what I've heard, Jeddah is not as conducive to overtaking. It's still better than Japan. And also, I think they have softer tires for Jeddah.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. But
So that might
listen,
change.
top seven drivers, you could put all of their names in a bingo wheel, pull one out other than probably Piastri at top, and it is a complete toss-up on who's landing 2 to 7. Let's launch into Spill the Grid, our gossip with a racing twist. Prior to the race, we saw reports that Leclerc and Hamilton were going to go down different developmental paths. Ferrari did bring the floor upgrade to Bahrain. They were the only two drivers in the top 10 to start on medium tires instead of soft. And we did see a little bit of change in their overall strategies from this race. What do you think of that from Bahrain and what that will mean for Jeddah?
Ferrari took a gamble. I didn't agree with their gamble when the race started because I thought the first stint on the mediums were not great, which made sense because everyone around them was on softs. So even though I thought Leclerc did not have a good start, on the other hand, I didn't expect him after seeing his tire choice that he would keep P2. The second stint on the mediums was going great. Like they both unlocked something, they both moved up. I think if the safety car came much later or not at all, that we could have seen them do something special with the strategy because I think their next pit stop would have been to switch to softs, not hard,
I
and that
agree.
could have made the difference. So that was very sad. But Ferrari, 9 times out of 10, is not helped by the safety car. I think the only shocking thing was that Red Bull was also not helped because usually it's the other way around. Claire argued for a one stop. I'm glad In this case, the team did not listen because I don't see how that would have helped the matters. Overall, I feel a little better about the strategy department. I say every time, why can't we have split strategies? Especially with Hamilton qualifying so far down from Leclerc. For instance, let's see what happens if you put him on soft and Leclerc on mediums and see how far those softs go, because that could have been the difference when the safety car did come to put Leclerc on soft. I don't think it would have worked because I think Lando still would have passed them, but it could have been something different.
You never know because Russell was complaining about being on softs. I do see how going 20 plus laps on softs would, give you pause.
Lando said, I don't understand what he's complaining about because softs are the best tire. The other thing that's key is that he had clean air because he was so far behind Piastri. That's what helped him keep the soft. And Mercedes is just better with their integration of their tires than Ferrari. So no matter what, if they changed the softs at the same time, I don't think it would have helped Leclerc and Hamilton.
We saw FIA Deputy President for Sport resigns after a standards breakdown. Maybe this is foreshadowing of things to come and move in the right direction. Verstappen continues to fuel Aston rumors. His manager was seen in a heated exchange with Helmut Marko after the Bahrain Grand Prix, and Max himself was reported by the racing pilot to have said, quote, "I've always admired Fernando and Adrian. Working with them would be a breath of fresh air."
Okay, he's a little presumptuous that he would be working with Fernando Alonso. I don't know when this quote was said because the last thing I heard was there's an emergency meeting at Red Bull, and according to Helmut Marko, it's about the fact that they have to do something to retain him. There's definitely some truth to those rumors. I think it's clear that Verstappen is very unhappy with Red Bull. Apparently, he has an exit clause in his contract that if he's out of top three of the Drivers' Championship, that's when he can trigger an exit clause. And he has until the summer break to do that. I don't think he will fall out of top four, even though I kind of wish he would, because you know who I want to get into top three.
I don't know. I think it could. And I think that's when silly season really kicks in. And I think when there is smoke, there is fire. Although I still stand by if he's going to leave Red Bull, I think he goes to Mercedes.
So wait a second. You think he's going to fall out of top three, and yet you're predicting him P2 for Jeddah, which will give him so many points that he probably won't fall out of top three.
All right. I might be rethinking my prediction because I feel more confident in him leaving Red Bull than him being P2 in Jeddah.
As the teams head to Jeddah for the final leg of this triple header, anticipation builds for the high-speed street circuit known for its challenging layout and dramatic races. In our next episode, we'll dive into what happened in the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, including team strategy, driver form, and any surprises. Stay tuned.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your Jeddah podium predictions. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.
Thank you.